a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
It's the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. No Cleon Wall today. We'll join him later in the week on another episode of the Jazz Notes Podcast. But today I want to talk about the Jazz 4 preseason games so far, the questions we had going into the season that we hoped, I think, the Jazz would be able to answer in 4 or 5 games, what they're not going to be able to answer. Now, why I'm doing this show today and not after the Jazz take on the Portland Trail Blazers is because the Jazz announced that for today there was not going to be a practice before they take on the Blazers in their preseason finale. What that tells me is that the Jazz are likely done with their installation, their true preseason installation, at least as far as what we're going to see before they take on the Oklahoma City Thunder coming up a week from Wednesday, October 23rd, in their preseason opener. The Jazz will have another week to get ready, really kind of buckle down, make sure they're as sharp as they can be for game one. But I think the questions we're going to get answered today and before the preseason ends, we probably already know. We're not going to learn a whole lot from the Portland Trail Blazers game. Maybe the Jazz play better. Maybe the Jazz play worse. But as far as big picture answers, I'm not sure if we're going to get any more. So what were our big questions for the Jazz? One of the things we did know was who the majority of the starters were going to be for this team. Rudy Gobert was going to start. Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley were both going to start. There were some questions of who was going to play the 3 and who was going to play the 4 for the Jazz. But I think most people assumed Bojan Bogdanovic, after getting that big 4-year deal, was probably going to find his way into the starting lineup, and that has been the case so far. Every game he's been available, Bogdanovic has started. So who ends up getting that other spot? And you play Bogdanovic at the 3, do you play him at the 4, or is he simply a wing and the player next to him, whether that's Jeff Green or Royce O'Neal, who are the other players we've seen start alongside of him against NBA competition? Are they the 3? Are they the 4? Or again, are they just wings and just going to play whoever they match up best with defensively? So how have these two fared, Royce O'Neal and Jeff Green? Jeff Green is a guy who every stop he's had, once he leaves, everyone who's watched that team, and so it's smart to follow and smart to believe it, says, don't believe the hype. Don't just believe what you see. There's just not the consistency there that you're going to want from a guy who you're going to lean on heavily, and the Jazz are going to rely on Jeff Green heavily, as we're in the conversation that he might be starting for this team, and at worst, he's the 7th man. Maybe Joe Ingles is the 6th man. We'll talk about that coming up in just a moment, but at worst, Jeff Green is going to be one of the top 7 or 8 rotation players in this lineup. So how much can you actually believe of what he's doing? Well, we know he's not going to continue to shoot as well as he has through preseason. He's averaging 13.8 points. He's shooting 73% from the floor and 58% from the 3-point line. Okay, that's not going to happen. The good news is he's getting a ton of shots in transition. Well, transition, he's going to score at a very high rate. So if he can get out and run, and he's run like a big man that we haven't seen for the Jazz in a very long time, if he can continue to do that and get easy transition baskets, there's no reason he can't stay over 50% as a shooter. Now, the 3-point shooting's going to drop and drop significantly, but it's at 58% now. Does that drop back to 38? Does that drop back to 35? Does it fall down to 32? Those are the questions that we have to see. But for the most part, he looks comfortable playing in Quinn Snyder's system. He looks comfortable playing next to the guys the Jazz have, and he's getting a lot of spacing, and I think that's something we're seeing throughout. The Jazz are getting open shots. Now, they just haven't knocked them down yet, but they're getting open shots. So who's better, Royce O'Neal or Jeff Green in the starting lineup? Royce O'Neal is such an interesting player for me when we look at his career with the Jazz. His first year as a rookie, he had a breakout, unexpected, signing from Europe, came in, had some nice defensive moments, and even showed he could score the ball and shoot the ball a little bit. Then he got significantly better offensively, I thought, his second season. Saw his three-point shooting percentage climbed and over 38%, one of the better shooters on the Jazz last year. But still, despite the fact that he was playing about four more minutes a game, his shot attempts were almost identical to what they were in season one. You would think, well, you put him in a bench unit this year that lacks a traditional go-to score, that doesn't have a guy who we know is going to be the man to put points on the board, and you think, well, give Royce O'Neal a green light and put the ball in his hands and see if he plays well. Through the preseason, it's actually been the opposite. He's played much better with the starters and has kind of struggled in his bench role. Now, Royce, in his lone start against the Pelicans, had 16 points. He was 6 of 8 from the floor and shot the ball well from the three-point line. Royce O'Neal might be the type of player in the NBA that if he's the fifth best guy on the floor on your team, at least offensively, he's going to give you a lot because he's good enough to punish you if you forget about him. And the truth is, it's hard to defend five guys for a full possession, regardless of the team. So if Royce O'Neal is getting open looks based on the attention Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, and Bojan Bogdanovic are getting, maybe Royce O'Neal has that breakout season, but he has to be in the starting lineup to do it. Jeff Green, on the other hand, is averaging 13.8 points per game, as I mentioned, shooting the ball well. His best game came against the Pelicans, as did Royce O'Neal's, but Jeff Green was coming off the bench and he gave the Jazz 20 points. That's a guy who's played so much basketball in his 10-year career. Is he in a spot now where he's comfortable starting, he's comfortable coming off the bench, and you're comfortable putting him in a spot where he can get a lot of shots, he's going to have the green light early, and he seems to have some early chemistry with Joe Ingles that maybe allows him to be that go-to scorer off the bench, and that's a role the Jazz are going to need, and probably one Jeff Green's going to like. Jeff Green's going to like getting shots. He's going to like being able to get out and run in transition, and maybe that's what the identity of this second unit has to be. It's not going to be a lockdown defensive unit for the most part. Ed Davis is a good player. He's not Derek Favors defensively. Joe Ingles is a very good player, probably going to initiate the offense. He's a good defensive player. He's not a lockdown defensive player. Emmanuel Mudiay, Dante Exum, we'll talk about them. What do you get from them defensively this year? What do you get from Dante Exum at all? I think those are big question marks. So maybe this is a unit that has to be willing to get out and run and move the ball and play with pace, and Jeff Green might be the perfect player to do that. So maybe it best serves the Jazz to bring Jeff Green off the bench, leave Royce O'Neal in that starting lineup. I'll be curious what we end up seeing from the Jazz starters against the Portland Trail Blazers, and then what we see in their preseason opener. But don't be at all surprised if Royce O'Neal ends up winning that job, not because he's better than Jeff Green, but because it's a better fit for him, and it unlocks more of both Jeff Green and Royce O'Neal. Now, we did mention Joe Ingles and what Joe Ingles has been able to do off the bench. He did start his first game. He played against Adelaide, and of course, playing against an Australian team, it makes sense to highlight Joe Ingles for everything he's done for Australia basketball. But he's been fantastic coming off the bench, and I think it's a spot that was long rumored to be where he would be playing. I do think there are major question marks moving guys who have traditionally started in the league back to the bench and asking them to be that sixth man. It's not always natural. Not everybody can turn into Manu Ginobili, but Joe Ingles looks like he's found a way to do it. He's had 8 assists in both of his last two outings for the Jazz against the Kings last night and against the Pelicans before that, but he's not getting shots. How comfortable are Jazz fans with Joe Ingles not getting looks? How comfortable is Quinn Snyder? Dennis Lindsay with Joe Ingles not getting shots? He's one of the best shooters, if not the best shooter on this team. He's been over 40% for the majority of his career from the three-point line, has seen that number climb the last couple of years. Do you need those shots from Joe Ingles in the second unit to be successful, and can you sacrifice what he gives you in the starting lineup? I think the early return is yes, and some of it's a requirement because, again, what you're going to get from Mudiay and what you're going to get from Exum is a major question. We've not seen Dante Exum yet this year. I don't think there's an accurate timeline that we know when he's going to come back. He's still listed as out and inactive on the pre-game injury list that the Jazz released. He's out there practicing, but it's clear he's not playing a 5-on-5 scrimmage. He's going 2-on-2, which is where we saw the little dust-up that he had with Mieone. That's where Dante Exum is, so he could be a ways out still from being fully healthy. And Emmanuel Mudiay has only played one game so far for the Jazz, and it was mixed results. I thought he shot the ball well. He was 4 of 6. That's solid. You'll take that. Doesn't go to the free throw line. Gets his shot blocked a lot. Had 0 assists in his minutes last night against the Kings. He just might not be an offensive initiator. And one of the things I do like that Quinn Snyder does so well, he doesn't ask players to go out and be something they're not. He finds their few strengths, and most players have a few strengths, and he highlights them. And I think when you look at Emmanuel Mudiay, his strength is not going to be a point guard. And that's what Denver wanted him to be, and that's what New York wanted him to be. I don't think that's what the Jazz are going to ask him to be. They're going to ask him to go out there, find a shot, look to get some buckets, and off of that, if you can draw enough offensive attention to do a simple kick out and find a shooter for three, maybe you can find some minutes on this team. If he can do that, I think he can have a good role on this team, but it's going to be focused on that specific skill set on the offensive side of the ball. And then he's got to prove he can play defense, and he struggled last night against De'Aaron Fox. The truth is, everyone struggles against De'Aaron Fox. He's one of the best and quickest offensive players in the NBA. He gets in the paint against every good defensive player, so it was no surprise he was able to do that last night, again against Emmanuel Mudiay. But the effort's got to be there, and the results have to be there, and you just did not quite see it last night against the Kings. So with that said, the backup point guard might have to be Joe Ingles, and the Jazz will still run it by committee. I think you'll still see George Niang out there getting some opportunities. You're going to stagger a lot of the minutes for Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell. They're both going to get essentially what we would call backup point guard role opportunities. But I think Joe Ingles is going to be the guy, and if those eight assists that we've seen so far each of the last two games is a good indication of what he can be, the Jazz are probably comfortable playing a 6'8" backup guard who's essentially a forward, but runs that second system. And we've seen that work in the NBA traditionally and historically. And maybe Joe Ingles can step in and assume that role. And that would be a big benefit for the Jazz if he can do it. I still think he closes games with this roster. I still think you like his playmaking. And last night you saw it. The Jazz had an offensive juggernaut on the floor when they had Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles, Bojan Bogdanovic, and Rudy Gobert all out there together. Now they have to show that they can tighten it up and get some stops. They didn't do it last night. It's the preseason. Nobody's playing a lot of defense. I think one of the things we've learned about this team through four games is that the offense is good. The offense right now, their offensive rating is 109.5. It's actually lower than it was last season, but as far as where it ranks in the NBA, it's significantly higher. It's sixth best in the season this year. It was just 14th last year. That number will continue to climb in the regular season as you shorten up the rotation, you get your better offensive players out there, and they play more minutes. You're going to see that offensive rating climb for the Jazz, and I think that unit's going to be very dangerous, again, as long as they can find a way to get some stops. Now, what's interesting about this offensive rating being as good as it is, or at least as highly ranked as it is in the NBA, is the Jazz have yet to shoot the ball well from the three-point line. They're at 32.9% from the three-point line right now. They just have not found a way to find the bottom of the net from beyond the arc. As that rises, and it will rise, the Jazz were over 35% last year, so it's fair to assume adding Conley, adding Bogdanovic, adding Jeff Green, guys who can shoot the ball, that you're going to see that number climb. You're going to see that offensive rating continue to climb. And if the Jazz are at 6 right now, the rest of the league will continue to improve. Can they have a top 10 offensive rating in the NBA? Can they get higher than that? Can they have top 5? Traditionally, you look at these teams that can have top 10 offensive and defensive ratings, they go far in the playoffs. Can the Jazz get to that spot offensively? That's going to be the big question for this team. And if they can do it, the sky truly is the limit. It's going to come down to how well they continue to shoot that ball. And I think that's going to come. Jazz defense, though, we've seen it. They gave 133 points up to the Milwaukee Bucks in a miserable outing. And then back-to-back performances, the Jazz have given up 128 points. They did it to the Pelicans. They did it to the Kings. Now, some of that is points going up late against the Pelicans when the Jazz subbed out all their starters to begin the fourth quarter. Last night, though, against the Kings, the Jazz played big minutes. Their starters were playing into the fourth quarter, and the Jazz gave up 78 first-half points. So defense is a legitimate question for this team. Now, I don't see a scenario, unless Rudy Gobert goes superhuman, and he's done that before, I really don't see a scenario where this year the Jazz match what they've done each of the last three seasons, where they fill the number one spot, the number two spot, and the number three spot in various seasons as the top defense in the NBA. I would be surprised if they have a top three defense this year. I just don't think they have the pieces right now with Bogdanovic, with Conley, and the drop-off you lose from Favors and Ricky Rubio and the size that they were able to provide. I just don't see a spot where the Jazz can do that. Can they be top 10? Do they need to be top 5? Can they be 7 or 8? How much are they willing to sacrifice of that defense to benefit their offense? And that is a gamble. There are just not traditionally teams that are great offensively and great defensively because you generally don't have players who are that versatile on both sides of the ball. That's what the Jazz are going to have to figure out, where they're comfortable with and what nets them that best net rating, which is the difference between your offensive rating and what you give up on the other side of the ball. And I think that falls comfortably into that spot of what we don't know yet coming out of the preseason. Where are the Jazz going to find that? And not only do we not know it, my guess would be that Quinn Snyder in the Jazz front office doesn't quite know it either, where they feel like the best overall average is going to be between that balance of great offense and good defense, or great defense and good offense. Where do they feel like they need to be to win a playoff series coming up this year that they were unable to do last season? Donovan Mitchell, been fantastic so far in the preseason. His numbers are good. They're very similar to what we've seen in previous preseasons for him. honestly, I think that's a win. If you're looking for his numbers to explode, he's only playing 25 minutes a game. He's giving you about 15 points a game. His rebounds and assists are up over previous preseasons. I think the nice thing is it doesn't look like he's exhausted from FIBA basketball. In fact, he looks very much like he's picked up right where he left off, where I thought he was the best player on that FIBA basketball team, and he looks like he's carried that into the regular season. Now, he has not shot the ball well from the three-point line, as we mentioned. Basically, nobody has for the Jazz so far this year. He's just at 21%. But what I love is that his field goal percentage inside the arc is up to 48%. That's up from about 43% last year. That's a number that just has to go up. And if he rebounds to even his regular career average from the three-point line, which is 35%, you're going to see his efficiency skyrocket. And that's basically all that's left between Donovan Mitchell, the star, and Donovan Mitchell, the superstar, or the all-star, or all-pro, whatever you want to see from him. Donovan Mitchell, if he gets that efficiency up, where his effective field goal percentage is comfortably over 50, it was under 50 last year. If it's comfortably over 50, his true shooting percentage is up in the high 50s, he's going to be a guy who's just about as good as any wing or any guard there is in the NBA. And I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities for Donovan Mitchell as soon as this season, nor as an all-star berth, nor as an all-NBA appearance. I think we could see that, and I think you've seen good signs of that so far, despite a small sample size. I understand those are all issues. I just think you're seeing better looks, better opportunities, fantastic finishing. He's gone to the free throw line pretty well in two of his three outings so far. I think those are good signs for the Jazz and are going to be good for his efficiency. Now, what does that mean for Mike Conley? Because Mike Conley's really struggled so far in this preseason. Obviously, in his debut against Milwaukee, he didn't make any baskets, had a couple of free throws. I think he went 6 of 6 from the free throw line. But for the preseason so far, through three games, he's shooting just 29% from the floor and 30% from the three-point line. I think he's still trying to make sure he's not stepping on anybody's toes. I think he's still trying to figure out when he needs to pass, when he needs to shoot the ball, and what shots he's going to be looking at. Last year, he was the man in Memphis. He'd been the man in Memphis for some time now. Certainly knew where all of his looks were going to come from. Even after Marc Gasol was traded, he still knew where he was going to get his shots and what that offense needed to look like for them to be the most successful they could. And it's clear he just doesn't have that grasp. So he's going to have to figure out when playing alongside Rudy Gobert, when his job is to defer to Rudy Gobert and then still likely defer to Donovan Mitchell, where does he find his spots? What are his best shots look like? And how does he raise that efficiency? Now, he's not going to fall so dramatically, I should say, from what his averages were, where he was around 43% as a field goal shooter, 37% from the three-point line for his career, down to 29% and 30%. You're not going to see his numbers drop that drastically. But if there's a slow start to the season, we saw that Donovan Mitchell was slow to start the year last year. Maybe those efficiency numbers aren't as high as Jazz fans are used to or were hoping they would get from Mike Conley in his first year. It just might take a little bit of time for him to find his comfortable spot to get those numbers back up to where they've been closer to his career averages. And maybe he just doesn't get there this year, and the Jazz have to find a way to make up for that. The nice thing is Rudy Gobert shooting 90% so far in the preseason, just an unbelievable number. All he's doing is getting dunks and easy looks at the rim, and that's what you need from him. And as long as that number can stay high, there should be a relatively efficient Jazz offense. But the better Mike Conley can be, the better the Jazz can be, and they'll want those averages to climb sooner rather than later. So through four games of this Jazz team, I think we've recognized the offense has improved, and it's going to be improved over last year. You've got to clean up the turnovers, and you've got to make sure that those turnovers don't lead to easy baskets on the other end. And I think you can do that. I think it's going to be some of limiting Bojan Bogdanovic's role early. I think it's been fun to give him a long leash in the preseason. He can't keep turning the ball over. That means putting the ball in the hands of Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell more, and then making Bojan a little bit more of a shooter to start the season. I would suspect we do see that from the Jazz coming up next week against the Thunder. And then as he gets more and more comfortable, you give more of those playmaking roles. The nice thing is he doesn't have to do everything all the time right away. I think that's going to make the Jazz better. I suspect we're going to see Royce O'Neal end up with that starting job for the Utah Jazz. Again, he played so well when he's playing alongside other starters and might struggle a little bit when he's a more focused player in the scouting report coming off the bench. That just might not be his ideal role. And that can help the Jazz in multiple ways, especially if Jeff Green looks more efficient coming off the bench for the Jazz when he had that 20-point outing. That's your Jazz Notes podcast for today. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. Appreciate you tuning in. Make sure to tune in again later this week. We'll have more for you.